this is more than a hobby. Give them more like I'm Bobby. This is my team and they got me. Shout out to Billy, we're bonding. We got us 3 cups, mate. I know it ain't too late. We'll turn that 3 into 4 and turn that 4 into 8. So come on, you Irons. It's time, throw on your claret and blue and listen up to this rhyme. 112 years, wow. Iconic bowling ground at London Stadium now. Blowing bubbles from the crowd, let the Premier League know. The Irons going for the gold, scoring 100 plus goals like Paulo Di Canio. So kick it off at the homies, known as Brawley and Tony, and keep on blowing those bubbles.
Hi, everyone. Welcome to another episode of the West Ham Way USA podcast. I'm one of your co-hosts, Brawley Darbin. In St. Louis, on the other side, we have Tony Clark in Harrisburg, Pennsylvania. What's going on, Tony?
Yep, I'm in Harrisburg this week, ready to rock on another podcast, coming to you after 3 points. I hope we don't get named the Fair Weather Podcast, because I feel like we typically pod after wins. But it feels great to be back this week now that we have some time.
Yeah, for sure. I think the last recorded podcast we did was August the 30th. So we took like the entire month of September and half of October off. So it's good to be back doing one of these with you. It seems like we probably haven't really won a league game since then either. So people calling us fair weather may have some validity to that, but I'm stoked after a awesome performance away at Everton. And we've missed a lot in this month and a half. So European games, cup games, some heartbreak in the league, but you know, it's good to be back in the win column and good to be back talking with you.
Yeah. It's funny. I think it was, I feel like I got it mixed up, but I believe it was the first international break. We're like, okay, we're going to take a quick international break and we'll be right back. And next thing you know, life got busy and here we are October 17th.
After the second international break.
Exactly.
Yeah.
We didn't say which one we're coming back. We didn't say
which one. That's true. But in the most recent couple of matches, I think the Brentford game before the last international break was one of the most heartbreaking games for West Ham. I think credit to Brentford for doing what they did. And, you know, they've really come and set the Premier League alight. They really should have at least gotten a draw, if not beaten Chelsea yesterday. So credit to Thomas Frank and what those guys are doing down in West London. But going into this game, it would have been easy for us to, after the international break, heads drop, we're away at Everton, tough game, to maybe not get a result. And then lo and behold, we go and beat Everton. I believe I have this right in saying for the first time ever, we've beaten Everton in 2 consecutive games at Goodison Park. So that's a good stat, and that's something that we should look positively upon, because a little bit of history made today.
Yeah, Everton's one of those teams where we just can't ever seem to figure it out. But over the last few years, we really have had their number at Goodison Park. Obviously, I always talk about my event, but then, like you said, two games in a row. They were missing some key guys, but at the same time, we still had to go get the result, and we did.
For sure. Yeah, I guess let's get into the lineup. Did you have any concerns with what we put forward as far as the lineup goes?
Not really. I mean, our lineup has been very consistent this season, and I actually really enjoy that. Obviously, the big change is Ben Johnson. Yep. And I'm the king of getting ahead of ourselves on the podcast, and I know you always get it frustrated with me, but I do want to point out, because we're talking about Ben Johnson in the lineup piece, I feel like I don't give him enough credit when we do these podcasts. Everyone seems to love Ben Johnson, and I got no problem with the guy. I'm never overly impressed as much as everybody else. I think he plays fine. I think he makes a lot of young guy mistakes, which he is young, but I never really have my my hopes as high as everybody else does about him. But man, did he have a hell of a game today. But really about the lineup, no, I was not surprised. Same formation, same concept we've been playing. Zuma, I'm not surprised over Dawson, and obviously Ben Johnson in for Sofal.
Did they say what's going on with Sofal? Why he was missing today? Just completely sidetrack, just to give a little bit of context. Today I took Hayes and Sammy down to the Amsterdam Tavern for Hayes's first West Ham experience in a bar, and that was a lot of fun. But I haven't got to go into any social media, like hardly at all. And I haven't got to read what X has had to say. So for the most part, I haven't seen anything on social media today. So I still am not sure as to why Sofal. I know he was injured going into the international break, but I would have thought that he would have recovered in time to play today. And then Crowell was also missing from the bench, which I thought that was surprising also.
I do not have any actual factual information. However, I can only assume, I swear somebody in our group chat said something about Crowell being vaccinated, but I think it has to do with both of them being out on international duty or at least being away with the Czech team, I think.
Wasn't Suchet there also too, though? So that would,
that's true. That's true. So then that doesn't make sense. My theory's busted. Way to go. No. So I have no idea. Crowell must have had a knock as well.
God, I was just curious. I wasn't sure if you knew anything. That's why I asked. So I didn't.
No, I have no idea. But yeah, do you have anything additional in the lineup? Like, I don't really have, none of it's really surprising.
No. If you're David Moyes, that's the team. Okay. The one thing that I would have probably done is I would have started Areola again. I'd be starting him because I just don't understand what's the point of getting a guy in on loan with an option if you're not going to play him at all. But I mean, you can't criticize Fabianski. Some people were criticizing him going into the game, I'm thinking I would have started Areola.
Right.
But Fabianski was getting some criticism for the way he played against Brentford and the way he played against in the previous game. I'm blanking on the game off the top of my head, but he
Leeds.
I do think he gets some unjust criticism now because Areola is behind him and people want to see him so bad. So I think people are looking for things to get upset with him about, but today he didn't do anything wrong. He didn't do anything spectacular, but he didn't mess anything up. So it's hard to criticize him. So I'm happy with it. I want to see Areola play in the Premier League. I really do.
I think you and I criticized him at least at the beginning of the season. I just don't think he ever looked sharp. I don't think he looked poor. I don't think he looked bad. I just never thought he looked sharp. I thought there was some goals where I'm like, that he probably would have saved the previous year or a previous form. However, I thought he played well today, and I get what you're saying about going in, seeing Areola, but, you know, I think Fabianski is the number one guy right now. I agree that it doesn't really make sense to bring a guy in on loan unless Fabianski's retiring at the end of the season and they just haven't announced it. Other than that, I mean, it doesn't really make sense. And they told Areola that he's the guy next year.
Yeah. Well, we should see him on Thursday. We're playing Genk away. Are we away in Genk on Thursday?
Nope, we're at home.
We're at home. So yep. We got a European game to look forward to. So that's good. But okay. So we totally got off track there going into the Everton game. I thought we started as well as we've started all season. The first 10 minutes of the game, I don't think Everton hardly had a touch of the ball the first 10 minutes. I mean, it was wave after wave after wave of West Ham attack. And it's just, that's the way I want to see us start a game. Go, if you're going away from home, you're going up against a team that isn't notorious for their attacking prowess. So let's step on their throats and try to get something quickly. We didn't end up scoring, but we were terrific in that opening 10 minutes. I mean, every pass was connecting. Everyone looked great. We just didn't get a goal, but I thought we started the game absolutely brilliantly, and you couldn't have hoped for a better start without scoring a goal.
It really felt like we were all over them the entire game. I mean, we finished the game with 61% possession.
Yeah, that's rare for us.
Yeah, well, and we're talking about away from home. I really just felt like we had their number all game, and it really felt like it was going to be one of those weeks, as you were saying, that we have the dominant opportunities and we're just not going to capitalize.
Yep.
So I was pretty impressed, and I was laying there in bed. You were down at Amsterdam Tab. I was laying in bed, and I just felt like that Everton were going to score on something jammy or like some sort of counter, because it really felt like our press was more and more and our control was more and more. And I was just waiting any moment for us to concede. But we really took it to them, and eventually it broke through. But the first half I thought was a very good half.
Agreed. And one thing I was really annoyed with early in the game was the referee booking Antonio for a dive. He wasn't even looking for anything. Like, it's possible for a guy to go down without there being that much contact and it also not be a dive. Like, I didn't think there was much contact there. There was a little bit, but it looked like he was already stumbling forward and his momentum was taking him down. And he didn't like turn and look at the ref as this, like to say, where's the foul? Where's the free kick? He just fell and he got right back up. And then the ref blows it the other way and gives him a yellow card. I thought that was shocking.
I thought it didn't even make sense. And then I actually had double issue with it because it wasn't even for a penalty.
Right.
You know, if he was trying to be deceitful for a penalty or something like that, then yeah, okay. But you're spot on. He barely touched him, but he didn't roll around yelling, where's the pen? Where's the foul outside the box? It was literally a nothing call, in my opinion. It was no dive, no foul.
Yep. And 20 minutes later, an Everton player almost
the same thing in the other corner.
Yeah. And the referee correctly calls it a corner. But if that's not a dive, then what is? Like, he went down without there being any contact, and the referee said that's not a foul. So it was like, so is that a dive then? If you're saying Antonio dove, wouldn't that have been a dive as well? And you go and book the guy? I don't think Everton had a single player booked today, by the way. And I think we had four. I was really, really annoyed with the referee today. That
includes Suchek getting stomped in the face.
And that is up for debate, whether I still don't know whether it was intentional or not. It was kind of weird. I've only seen a couple replays of it. So
I think it was intentional. I don't think it was on purpose.
But like, his foot going backwards doesn't make a lot of sense in that situation when he knows the guy's behind you also. And I haven't seen too many replays of it, but that was bizarre.
I mean, the play should have been stopped for getting kicked in the head.
Yeah, but no kidding.
I also really don't think that maybe I have the benefit of the best wishes in people or whatever the phrase is, best hope or best intentions for these people. But I can't imagine they would kick him in the face like that. Like, that's very dangerous.
Yeah,
like, we're not talking about punching or an elbow. Like, a sly elbow is one thing. A stomp is another thing. Like,
he could have taken his eye on
somebody's
out.
Thigh. Like, if you stomp on someone's ankle or foot or thigh or like maybe in the crotch, like, yeah, okay, that's like really shitty. Kicking somebody in the face is a whole different level of malice.
Yeah.
And I don't think that. I really don't.
Yeah, I hope not, because I don't think you should ever play again if that was the case. But to get back into the first half, though, I thought we ended the half pretty well. It was just a good all-around good performance. I was, like I said, I was a little annoyed at the refereeing in the first half. But, you know, we took it to the half. We held on. Towards the end of the half, we had to weather the storm a little bit and just make sure we didn't concede, which I thought was good. And then we get into the second half, and we kind of picked up where we left off. Everton took it to us right at the beginning of the half, but then we really settled back down into the game. And I thought I thought Saïd Benrahma was trying a little bit too hard today. It seemed like he was trying really hard to make something happen. And where if he lets the game come to him rather than him trying to take the game to the opposition, I think he's better. But I got to say, I think he was a spark all day long. So in the first half, that offside goal that we scored, Benrahma did brilliantly to set that up. And Suchek, unfortunately, was just a one foot offside and right decision. But I just wanted Benrahma just to settle down a little bit today. And I think since I've obviously I love the guy, I praise him every single week, it's only right that I give him a little bit of criticism today. And but I thought overall he actually had a decent game, just trying too hard to make something happen. I don't know if you agree with that.
Yeah, I didn't think it was his best game, but I don't think anyone played poor. Like, again, I don't think it was a bad game. I don't think that he was detrimental to the side or anything. I just don't think he was as sharp and creative with the best decisions.
Uh-huh.
But one thing I do want to say that leads into our goal is I thought, because it goes with also a lot of the things our team was doing, I thought Pickford had a really good game, minus the head thing that led to the corner.
Mm-hmm.
Minus that, which obviously led to our goal. I think there was a bunch of opportunities that we could have scored maybe another goal or two that he made some very good saves.
Yeah, and getting to the goal, you're right. And I should say, I should give credit to the referee in that situation, because Mikel Antonio has every right to go up for that ball, same as Pickford. And Pickford should be claiming that. I mean, Pickford should not be losing that to Mikel Antonio's head when Pickford can jump and grab the ball with two hands. So he's got no one to blame but himself. It's the right decision, too. Antonio gets his head to it first. It goes off of Pickford's fingertips and then out for a corner. It was the absolute 100% correct decision. And I got to say, if I'm being critical of the referee, I got to praise him in that situation, because without him, we probably don't score that goal. I think most referees probably blow that dead for a free kick Everton's way and on a foul on the goalkeeper. So really well done. And then obviously Ogbonna heads in the corner and we're up 1-0 and we're in dreamland.
It was perfect too. I was explaining it to someone. The way that it just glided off of his head was just perfection. Like, he just helped the ball along. He didn't put any extra power on it. He didn't even flick it. He didn't head it hard. He just guided the ball into the back of the net, and it was just stunning. It was beautiful. Oh gosh.
Yep, that's the best way you could describe a center back going up for a corner. If you could do that every time, obviously you would score and you would take that every time, but that's how you draw it up, is you want your two center backs right in that position to get a glancing head into the side netting. And it was terrific. It was Ogbonna deserves that. He's been terrific for us all year long. I think the partnership between him and Zuma, we finally have a rock solid central defense. Like, there's not many better pairings in the Premier League. There's a few, but there's not a ton that I would take over those two at the moment right now, the way they're playing.
Well, that, and on top of our right back, Soufal, I think is one of the top right backs in the league. I think he's proven himself to be as well. So, and I don't even think that I even want to give Cresswell some credit for being a rock and really stepping up his game.
Yeah.
I think every summer now, or at least every window, you and I record a podcast and we're talking about, oh man, Cresswell, I think we need upgrades there. Ooh, Masuaku, I think we need upgrades there. But Cresswell has been playing very well himself too.
Yeah, and Cresswell is, I don't know if this is still the case, but he was, going into last week, he was the highest scoring fantasy Premier League defender, and he was the highest point scoring defender last year as well. So, I mean, the guy is clearly an absolute. Moyes has turned his career back around with the way he's playing with us, and because, you know, a couple seasons ago we were talking about selling Ogbonna, selling Antonio, and Cresswell was a part of that too. Sell Cresswell, because we didn't think we'd ever see the best of him again, and here we are, and they're all proving us wrong again.
One of the exciting things about this team, I genuinely think that we have a very good team, and Moyes has done a fantastic job to bring in the players that he wants. Because here you are talking about a great rock solid center back pairing.
Yeah.
Here I am talking about praise to our outside backs. Now you move into the midfield. You have Declan Rice, one of the top English center mids. Thomas Souček, incredible. And then the depth we have in the attacking midfielders between Fornals, Vlasic, Lanzini, Benrahma, and Bowen. The only thing, what are we missing? Striker depth.
Yeah.
I mean, honestly, if we had striker depth, I would put us, a lock for fifth. I think Arsenal is a mess. I think Spurs are so hit or miss. I don't rate their manager. From Wolves. I think that they're a mess as a club, and I think that we have the ability to be a lock for maybe not even fifth, but at least Europe every season with the team that we have. And I know I'm talking crazy, and I probably sound like an absolute idiot from where we were 2 years ago, relegation battle, but we really have a very good team. The only thing we're missing is striker depth.
Yeah, I totally agree. I couldn't agree anymore. I mean, I think I say it every podcast, I'm still baffled as to why we just didn't go get one, just one. Now, it doesn't even have to be like the most flashy guy in the world. I would take a striker from the championship who's playing on a lower down the table team who just wants to Google. Get Premier League time. Yeah, I mean, maybe not that far down the league, but I mean, a guy that wants to play in the Premier League who'd be excited by the prospect of playing at West Ham and be okay with riding the bench and fighting for his place. Like, I just, you can't help but like go and look. And I know system makes everything. It wasn't working Sebastian Allaire at West Ham. The system just didn't suit him. But you look at to go on to see what he's done, and I don't know the exact stat now, but at one point he had scored 22 goals in 29 appearances for Ajax. I mean, that, and I think 10 of those were like in the Champions League, like just a ridiculous return. So it's like, if that guy was on our team last year, I have no doubt we'd be in the Champions League. And I just, today Antonio goes down because his foot gets trod on. I thought he tore his hamstring again. Thank God that didn't mm-hmm. happen, but we know it's coming. The Mikel Antonio injury is, I have no doubt, is right around the corner. And I just think if we could just get one striker in January, that's all we're missing right now. Just go and get a striker in January. You have to.
You took the words out of my mouth. I was going to ask you, if we get through the Europa League group stage, surely you have to go get a striker, right?
You would think, but Moyes beats to what's the phrase, he marches to the beat of his own drum. That's what I was looking for. And he does what he wants. So I mean, if he doesn't see it as a need, then you got to trust the guy, right? But I, if it's me, 100%, yeah, I'm going to get a backup striker for sure.
The reason I'm saying that is I don't see, in my opinion, Yarmolenko and Bowen
no
being your Europa League striker.
No.
So either that or they're your Premier League striker and Antonio is your Europa League striker, or you're now giving Antonio 180 minutes a week in the group stage.
Which is what we're doing now.
I mean, yeah. Not group stage, in the knockout stage, which could be fine where he doesn't need to go 100% against Genk and Zagreb and Vienna if we're really dominating these teams. But that's not going to fly when AC Milan finishes third in their group and gets bumped to Europa League.
Right.
That's not going to fly if freaking Sheriff FC or whatever the fuck they got are decide that they're actually contenders and knock Real Madrid out of their group. And next, you know, Real Madrid's in Europa League.
Yeah.
Like that's not going to fly when we draw those clubs. So
it would be crazy if we draw Real Madrid away in the knockouts. Wouldn't that be something?
Oh man, I'd be booking. Listen, I'd be buying that flight quicker than lickety split. Honestly, yeah. Man, that'd be fucking crazy.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah. That would make me very excited. I mean, the draw would suck, but we'd be excited at the same time. Getting the chance to play them, like I would rather draw anyone else but them. Honestly, it's like us beating Man United in the cup and then drawing Man City next round. It's just like the ultimate. Like, so we haven't recorded since then, but with that game, I was ready to write it off. I could care less if we beat Man United in the cup. I would rather play the kids. I'd rather just lose, get it over with, get it done, uh-huh. And then they suck me in. Lanzini scores, and then I'm like, okay, well, this is exciting. Like. It seems like the United fans are really pissed off that this is happening. Like they really want to win. They would like the trophy. And then we go and we finally hang on. We beat them. We get revenge for the game 4 days earlier. And then the ultimate kick in the dick, you draw Man City, who haven't lost in this competition in 4 years. They haven't lost a single game in this competition in 4 years. Like, just like the ultimate West Ham thing to happen. It's so frustrating. But on one hand, I guess you could look at it and say they're due for one, right? They're due to lose this competition. But I think we've been saying that for probably the last 3 years, everyone playing them, they're due. So I don't know. I didn't mean to get caught off on a tangent there. But anyway, we end up beating Everton. Great game.
Yeah, back to the game.
And game over. We're happy. We won 3 points. David Moyes gets one over on his old team, and we collect 3 points. We're up to sixth again, which is exciting.
Back down to seventh since Spurs won.
Oh, damn it. So we're back in seventh.
Yeah, but, I mean, we're the Premier League table is right in the thick of it. You know, we're on 14 points. United's on 14 after their shit show against Leicester. Spurs won. They're on 15. Brighton drew against Norwich, and that takes them to 15. I mean, we're right in the midst of it. City on 17. So
it's, we're right where we want to be.
Exactly. I think the only thing that's a little bit concerning slash exciting is we have Spurs on Sunday, the 24th. So we have Genk on Thursday, the 21st, and Spurs on Sunday, the 24th. Yep. So that is going to be a massive match. If we beat Spurs, we jump them and can go fifth, obviously, depending on whatever Man United does. Man United plays Liverpool this weekend. So one of them are going to drop points, most likely.
Yeah, for sure. I think it's I wish Newcastle would have beaten Tottenham today. I was up at the Dam when there was a bunch of Newcastle people there. Obviously, the Newcastle fans are coming back out of the woodworks and they're really excited. And I think we should touch on that. So if you've been living under a rock, Newcastle have been taken over by basically the country of Saudi Arabia, essentially. Yep. And now control over 79% of the total wealth in the Premier League now is in Newcastle, which is mind-boggling if you actually like sit down and think about that. Like, one team owns, their net worth is 79% of the entire league. It's insane. Mm-hmm. Now, I must say, I am happy for the Newcastle fans. I'm a little envious of them, just a tiny bit. I don't think fans have to be the gatekeepers in this scenario. And if you're one of those people that's barking on about the human rights and that thing, that's well and fine if you really want to take a stance against that. One thing that's irritating me is people saying like, oh, Newcastle fans can't be happy because of where their money comes from. It's like, well, they've sat under the last 12 years under one of the worst owners you can possibly have. And I think they have a right to be happy and excited for the future. And I think today was a really good atmosphere at Newcastle. Apparently the city's buzzing, and I'm happy for the Newcastle fans. That's basically the gist of what I'm trying to say. And I don't know what you think about the Newcastle takeover.
No, I don't really care for them. I don't care if they're happy. I don't care if they're mad. Like, that's I don't care. I will say I'm glad it's not us with that takeover. I think that it's messy. I want no part of it. And as much as I can't stand GSB, I don't even care if Newcastle is going to spend absolute crazy money.
Which they will.
And it's not even – right, which they will. It's not even the ethics thing. Like, whatever. Not one of these owners in the league is ethical. I'm not going to get into politics, but I feel like if you're rich, you probably did very unethical things. But we'll leave it at that. Point of the story is everyone has skeletons in the closet. So that's not the reason why. I'm glad it's not us. If they're happy, good for them. The wealth thing, yeah, whatever. I just would hope that if we do ever get bought out and GSB are out, I know I'm picking a perfect scenario. I just hope that they're not mega rich like that. Like, I want to see someone who wants to own the club, has passion for the club, has more money to invest in the proper channels and wants to properly invest in the club. However, I do not want to see someone treat our club like a play toy. I mean, Newcastle now is going to be a sandbox. Like, imagine when you get financial takeover in FIFA and you can just buy any player. Like, that does not excite me. You know, I didn't support West Ham for that. Do I want to see us be successful? Do I want to see us be in Europa? Do I want to see us be in the Champions League? Of course I do. Absolutely. And I want to see us buy players, make profit and get there by earning it. I know it's really shitty and maybe people think I'm crazy, but no, I don't want to see us buy it like that. If we're going to buy it, I want to see us buy players that turn into good investments, that turn out to be great finds. I can see Newcastle just absolutely splashing disgusting cash, bringing in crazy managers, and they're going to be a top six club, and good for them. You know, if their fans are happy, sure. And if that's what they're content with and supporting, sure. I'm just glad it's not us. And I hope that is not going to be us in the future.
Yeah, it certainly is an interesting way of looking at it. I think there is something to what you're saying in the fact that you want to see us basically earn our way up there rather than spend our way up there, which I can agree with. Like, it is the most annoying thing in the world is seeing United and City spend £300 million every transfer window. And then, of course, they're going to be up there challenging with at the very top. I think, you know, it would be nice if you could basically spend an infinite amount of money and get the players that you really, really want. But I think there is something to not wanting to be a fan of a Man City or someone like that. And I can appreciate that. So I just wanted to basically throw it in there and get your views on it.
Just to clarify, if I could make an example, I am, if we want to talk about envious and jealous, I am disgustingly envious and jealous of Leicester.
Yeah.
That would be my dream scenario, and I'm jealous that it's not us in a way. Agreed. You know, the way their owner's properly invested, and they put a lot of money in that club too. That's not get it twisted. But the investment in infrastructure there, the investment, like, they still bought Tielemans, they still bought big players. So let's not like say that they're perfect when
they're not buying Mbappes or Neymars or Messi's or anyone like
Ronaldo,
that.
Ronaldo, Vodrin for like 90, you know, Maguire for 90. Like, they're not doing that. You know, they're the ones selling Maguire, right? Yeah.
Yeah.
No.
Mm-hmm. They
yeah.
did.
Okay. But yeah, I got mixed up. Maguire was at Hull before Leicester, though, right?
I believe so, yes.
With Bowen and Snodgrass. Anyway, the point of the story, though, is like that's what I'm jealous of. I think that's what I envision and ownership that I would want is someone that builds the infrastructure around the club and properly invests and flips their investments in players into more profit and then spends that money towards new players. The way that Newcastle is going to do it is going to be sad. And, you know, everyone loves City and has maybe it's because I'm not English and I don't have that tie and I don't get it. This like Man City love that West Ham fans have with City. I don't really care about them either. The way that they've done it is just kind of sad too. You know, United at least have like and Liverpool and unfortunately Arsenal and a few of these other clubs just have a history of success, you know, and then they spend the money that they have now and just keep building on that. You know, City were a nothing. Chelsea were a nothing until their ownership came in and blew the Premier League out of the water. So I hope it's not us. And I hope that one day that will not be us. And I guess that's coming from a place of privilege saying, hey, you know, I'm content with where we're at.
Yeah. And it's not going to be Pi Capital either now, since they've withdrawn their name from the ring. So I think we're all relieved that didn't happen. At least I am.
Yeah, same. Absolutely. And the way that they conducted their affairs was a mess. You know, the only good thing that they did was getting Tony Cody on board, and maybe they should have done that from the get-go and having him be the spokesperson. But other than that, I mean, the way that Rio and all of them were conducting their affairs, talking about sell Declan to Man United, and the way that they went on Talk Sport and sounded like idiots, like, it was terrible.
It was a train wreck. I mean, it takes a special kind of dumb to want West Ham fans who have been protesting for years against this board to want to keep them instead of you coming in. I mean, that says everything to me, where West Ham fans would get behind pretty much almost anyone who has the proper money to do it, would get behind virtually anyone could come in. Mm-hmm. And we would be excited to not have GSB anymore. And they come in and found a way to make themselves look so dumb that we would rather keep what we have. I mean, that I think it was a train wreck from day one. They couldn't get out of their own way. I mean, I could go on and on and on about all the things I thought was wrong. Like, for one, and again, I have nothing against Tom Skinner. I don't know the guy personally. Everyone says he's a great guy, but why are you targeting that guy to be your, like, your celebrity spokesperson that you're going to get involved? Like, West Ham have so many famous fans that you could try to get on board and try to get, like, and maybe they tried them and Tom Skinner was the best they could do. I don't know that, but like Russell Brand, James Corden, Nick Frost, Triple H. I mean, there's so many Brock
Obama. Why do you even have to do that?
West Ham fans. No. Right. But I'm saying if you're going to pick one and you go with at best a B-list UK celebrity. I mean, if you ask anyone in the United States who Tom Skinner is, they're going to have no godly idea who he is. It's like, and then that was step one. That was the first thing they did. And everything after that got worse.
But my argument, and you just kind of were like, yeah, you're right. But my argument is if you have to get a celebrity endorsement involved, you've already lost.
I think some people opinion, appreciate it. Yeah. I mean, people like you might not take it, but I mean, it does go some way. If you get like a James Corden saying, hey, these guys are great. I like what they're doing. I think they're, to you, they might lose credibility. No, I agree. I mean, I agree. Just do the talking with the financials and I don't need to hear it from some celebrity. I mean, I get what you're saying.
Because Tom Skinner didn't get on TalkSport.
Right.
Like what I'm saying, if you go on the radio or you give an interview and you're the CEO of someone who should be taking over a company or taking over a club and you have a clear vision of what you want to see for the club and what you're going to do, then you don't need Tom Skinner. You don't need James Corden. You don't, and I know these are just examples. You don't need Russell Brand. You don't need Katy Perry or whatever the fuck was going on there. Like you don't need anyone to do your talking. If you have a clear vision, that's what fans want. You know, I don't care what Tom Skinner has to say. I want to see what you have to do for our club. I don't need someone to say you're a good guy. If you have good plans and a great infrastructure idea, then that's what I want to see. And so
look at what Newcastle did. Newcastle was very professional. It was all kept behind closed doors and we didn't even realize that it was about to be done until like the day it actually happened when the news broke. All of a
sudden it's like imminent tomorrow or today, expect announcement, right? That's what I'm saying. And also, frankly, you almost set yourself up for criticism if you do it in the public.
Mm-hmm.
As in, we had no idea the Newcastle thing and all of a sudden it's like, yep, it's happening tomorrow. Let's get it. You know, no one had to say like, hey, well, what can these guys do for the club? Or I don't know if they're legit. You know, it was already done.
And it was a long process and they got blocked because of, I still don't understand the whole reason why they were blocked and now they're not. Had something to do with this and being sports. I know that, but I don't really understand what got resolved for them to now get to take over the club, but it was all professional. Amanda Stavely and I can't think of what the guy's name is. They kept it behind closed doors and they spoke when they needed to, but they didn't give, they didn't kick themselves in the face or shoot themselves in the foot along the way. I mean,
yeah,
the Newcastle fans wanted them from day one. So we can stop there on the takeover talk. I think that was a good little section. Moving ahead, we do play Genk at home, like you said, on Thursday. What kind of lineup would you be tempted to throw out there against Genk? Would you do basically the same lineup that played against, was it Vienna in the last Europa League game? Kind of a mix of first and subs?
Because of the position we're at and we're at home, I would do a full rotation. That Spurs game this weekend, and it sucks. I hate even being like this because we craved European football.
Yeah.
And here I am talking about, well, I think we need to rotate the side because we play Spurs on Sunday. But it's, in my opinion, it's the truth. The way that we were up 6 points, we're in a good position, and we'd be at home. I think a rotated side is what is needed to stay fresh. You know, we had just came off the international break, but a few of our key guys were playing. That's what happens when you have good players, I guess, which is nice. I think you need to rotate the side. I think we need to see Yarmolenko up top as striker.
Like.
I know, buddy. But
this is his time. I mean, if he's going to do it, it's going to be against a Europa League squad, I think. So
I would like to see Antonio rested. I'd like to see a rotated squad that we're fresh. And because I would like to, just as much as I love European football, there's nothing I would love more than taking 3 points off of Spurs on Sunday. And for me, that's most important in this scenario. I think the position we're in, I don't want to say take Europa lightly the rest of the way, because that is not what I'm implying with rotating the squad now. However, I think in the circumstances of who we play Sunday and already having 6 points in the bank, I think a rotated side against Genk is what is needed.
I think you're spot on. I think I would only probably keep a handful of guys in. I don't think I would totally change a team. I think Ben Johnson's going to have to play.
Yeah.
Unless Sofal is ready to go. But I would definitely, definitely, definitely rest Antonio. I would definitely rest Declan Rice. I probably give Thomas Suchek's face a little bit of a rest because he took a beating with that stud in the face. Maybe you let Zuma and Ogbonna play, or you probably play Zuma and Dawson. Well, you probably give Dawson a game.
I'd rest both of them because I'm confident in Dawson and Diop.
Oh, I forgot. I say forget about Diop. Yeah, that's so probably ready? Right.
Here's your rotation. And this is a great problem to have, though. Like, this is a great problem. Your rotation for – let's just start from the back. You know, Areola, there you go. There's his Europa game. Your center backs, Diop and Dawson.
Mm-hmm.
Your Johnson will probably have to play, like you said. But he's young and has fresh legs, hopefully. And then over on the other side, Masuaku gets his game.
Yep.
Crowell and Noble. Top, Noble, most likely.
Hopefully Crowell's back.
Yep, Crowell, Noble, there you go there. You know, probably, I think Bowen may play still, again, on Thursday. But then you have Lanzi, you can come in, and Vlasic.
Yep.
And then Yarmo up top. We have a whole second team now that I would be confident in that team going out and playing against Genk.
Yeah, that's probably fair.
And then you keep Bowen or Fornals, and I think you have a strong side.
Yeah, no, I think that's a fair. I think the point that you make about already having 6 points on the board, you can probably afford to. Not saying we're gonna drop or you think we're gonna drop points, but you can afford to drop two probably if it happened and you're sitting on 7 points with 3 games played, you probably take that. If we lose, it'll probably look dumb in hindsight. But you're right. The priority is definitely Spurs on Sunday. Are we? Is it Spurs away?
You know? No. It's. I think it's at home.
Spurs at home. Well.
Yeah, but here's the thing. Even if, so, let's just say Zagreb beats. So if I'm looking at the table here, West Ham has 6, Zagreb has 3, Genk has 3, and Rapid Wien has 0. So that means Zagreb plays Vienna. Let's say Zagreb beats Vienna because Vienna's already lost their first 2 games. Zagreb's on 6.
Yeah.
You know, and we hold the tiebreaker there because I believe, correct me if I'm wrong, but I believe in Champions League and Europa League, the tiebreaker is not goal differential. It's head to head.
Yeah. I couldn't tell you whether that was true or not.
I believe it is. So we would hold the tiebreaker there. And then Genk obviously would then have to beat us. And we would stay on 6. So let's just say a worst case scenario, we lost and Zagreb beats Veen. 3 teams are on 6 points and it's still everyone's in it. It's like we're losing anything. If we get a draw, we stay top and Zagreb is 7-6-4-0. So I think we're in good shape even if we drop points.
Yeah, I think that's well said. And I think you probably got me on board now for a full swap. I think the my biggest pieces I want to get out of the lineup is Antonio and Declan Rice. I think Rice has got far too many minutes going in his legs right now. And Antonio, as we know, is a ticking time bomb.
I'm going to make a counter argument to my argument then and try to sway you back off of my convincing. Ready?
Mm-hmm.
Get the points now, play a strong team, get the points now, get up to 9, then you get to 10, and then the other two, let's say you get a draw in the fourth game, get you to 10. The last 2 games, you don't have to play anybody.
Yeah.
And you can rest without any thought about, well, maybe if I get the points later down the line, you're already got it locked up. So that would be my only other.
That's the argument. I would say, though, and an argument to that is we should be going for first in the group. So that way we're avoiding the Champions League team falling down. Because I think the second place team in the group is going to draw the Champions League knockout. And that could be wrong, but that's my understanding. So I'd rather finish first in the group and draw one of the fellow Europa League
teams. Yeah, well, one of the things is there's like this weird playing round as well, I think. So it's like they drop out, but there's like the Europa League first round, I mean, group winners get to the round of like 16, and the round of 32 is the second place teams and the Champions League knockout people. However, it just really feels like we were set up to fail in a way. Let me tell you the teams that we play after every Europa League game. Ready? When we played Zagreb, we had United next.
Yeah.
When we played Rapid Wien, we had Brentford. Not bad. When we played Genk on Thursday, we have Tottenham. When we play Genk again, we have Liverpool. When we play Rapid Wien, we have City. And then when we play Zagreb, we have Burnley away. So four of the six games, we have top sides.
See, and I would look at that like a good thing. Like, we're already probably going to lose those games anyway. So let's take the tired legs into the game we're already going to lose. That would be my way of looking at it. But you can see the Brentford game we lost. But it's like, I would rather be tired against City than tired against Burnley. You know what I mean? Like, in games that I think we should be winning, I'd rather be fresh for those games rather than the games we're like probably already going to lose. Yeah. And yeah. I don't think fatigue played a factor in us losing to Brentford. I was shocked. One point about that game, I can't believe we didn't make a single substitution in the 94 plus minutes that we played against Brentford. Not a single substitution. that deserved to be criticized from David Moyes. That is one thing that he deserves some criticism for, because I don't think the fatigue necessarily played a factor as to why we lost the game, but we just played midweek against a Europa League opposition and you didn't change one single player in that game and we lose in the 95th minute. So, I mean, you should take some flack for that.
Yeah, I agree with that. But other than that, yeah, I mean, I'm excited for the game Thursday. I guess I hate midweek games just because I work. That's, I guess, the shitty thing about being American is it's in the middle of our work day. So hopefully I'll be able to have it on in the corner of my screen. I think I have some meetings that day, but I should be able to watch.
Yeah, no, I'll probably, I think I'll find a way to duck out and watch. I'm excited, looking forward to it. I love these Europa League nights. I tell you what, I wish I could go to one of the away games. Who knows, maybe in the knockout stages I'll be able to go, who knows. But as far as the group stage goes, I definitely won't be able to. But we didn't put out a question request this week, unfortunately, because we just figured late that we were going to be able to do this because we both had the night off. But unless you have anything else to add, do you have anything else you want to add to the end of the show here, or should we wrap this up?
Let's see. I mean, the only thing I'm really excited about is I just want to finish on a positive note, especially because we won. I'm really excited about the direction of this team and the culture we have changed on the player side and on the fan side. You know, we know how we all feel about GSB, or majority of the people, but I do want to say I think it's absolutely incredible what we got going on with this team and the players we have. You know, there's just like this different energy to go up to Everton and think that we can even get a result is exciting. You know, I remember just watching us like, oh, here's our yearly loss to Everton away. You know,
One this question team, I have for you. I'm sorry. Who was your man of the match today? I meant to ask you, who's your man of the match?
You know, I'm going to give it to him because I give him so much shit. I said this at the beginning. I was pumping up Ben Johnson.
Yeah, that was my pick,
we are the worst podcasters because we agree way too much. Ben Johnson was my man of the match.
He's terrific today.
because I criticize him so much, or I don't even criticize him. I don't rate him. I don't think that he's as good as everyone says he is. And then he pulled out that performance today and he was stunning. It was incredible. So I have so much praise for him, and he really proved me wrong today, and I hope he continues to prove me wrong. And every time I have a negative opinion about a West Ham player, I really hope to be proved wrong. I would never, ever root against a West Ham player. So I'm really proud of his performance today, and he has to be my man of the match.
Yeah, that was my choice also. If I was doing a runner-up, I would probably give – I thought Zuma was really good again today. He'd be up there. That
block at the end.
Yeah, Ogbonna. Mm-hmm. Was again, he got the goal, you give it to him. But Ben Johnson was my guy today. I think he didn't put a foot wrong. I think he completed every single pass he attempted today. Tracking back, he was terrific. Going forward, he was good. I mean, everything he did today was great. And I wasn't sure if I was crazy, so I'm glad you said that. But because I all game long, I was thinking, wow, he did great there. Wow, he did great there. And he looks so composed today, and I thought he was terrific. And I think we got a great 1-2 at right back now. And then he can play left back also, which is great.
I think the one of the things you just said was spot on. And you said the way that he – how do I put it? The way that he – his composure and the way he conducted himself. It wasn't just like what he did on the ball, but the way he defended as well as went forward with such precision. It was very smart. It was very calculated. I think he just had a very, very good decision-making game when he stepped to attack the ball, when he kind of waited for help and kind of directed a player to run a different direction. Like I just think overall, the way that he played today was very methodical and well done. I think it was great.
I agree. I couldn't agree more.
Yeah. Other than that, that's all I got tonight. You want to take us out on the part I always mess up?
Yeah. So if you want to follow us on Twitter, you can follow us at West Ham Way US Pod. If you want to follow me on Twitter, you can follow me at Brawley Darbin. And by the way, I posted on my Twitter and my Facebook, if you're friends with me on Facebook, but a very, very cute picture of Hayes in his little West Ham outfit. And for me, the tweet went somewhat viral. Not really. It only got like almost 300 likes, but that's still a lot of likes for something I post. So if you like cute baby pictures and you want to see a cute baby in a West Ham outfit, go on my Twitter page and check it out, because he looked pretty adorable. And West Ham, if you need any baby models for your stuff, Hayes is a perfect candidate for that. That's all I'm saying. If you want to follow Tony on Twitter, you can follow him at Tony Clark Dupe. And if you could please go leave us a 5-star rating and review on the Apple podcast or any other place you get your podcast from, we would be greatly appreciated. I know I was talking to someone who listens on like the Google podcast store, and he was like, are you on there? I'm like, honestly, I have no idea, but we are on there. I looked up, we're on every single platform where you get your podcast. So if you just leave us a review wherever you can, we certainly appreciate it. But that'll do it for this week's show. Hopefully we come back at you with 3 points against Genk and then another 3 against Spurs, and we're sitting right up the well, we'd probably be in fourth or fifth if we beat Spurs. So, but that's it. I'm gonna stop talking now. So we'll see you guys later. Irons.
I'm forever blowing bubbles. And my fortune's always hiding. This the American West Ham podcast. Y'all best dialing. I'm forever blowing bubbles. Hey, I believe it. I know that we're winning. I've been here since the very beginning. Yeah. Dreaming of the gold medal. We're lifting. Set it up like we're penalty kicking. 57,000 people packed. Hear the fans shout from the back. Take the ball and then we all attack. Make opponents feel the hammer crack. Wild nights, highlight stats. Tony got you covered on that. Brawley got the stories and the facts. Together everything is down packed. Three time gold winners, but now it's time to get another cup. West Ham fans stand up. West Ham fans stand up. I'm forever blowing bubbles. And my fortune's always hiding. It's the American West Ham podcast. Y'all best dialing. I'm forever blowing bubbles. I'm forever blowing bubbles. I'm forever blowing bubbles. I'm forever blowing bubbles. Said I'm forever blowing bubbles. And my fortune's always hiding. It's the American West Ham podcast. Y'all best dialing. I'm forever blowing bubbles. I'm forever blowing bubbles. I'm forever blowing bubbles. I'm forever blowing bubbles. Hey,
wait, the game. promotion demanded by West Ham. On a sunny afternoon in May at Wembley, promotion to the Premier League has been delivered. Ricardo Bassey, one of the January arrivals, with the biggest goal he will have ever scored. And West Ham, Wembley winners again for the first time since 1980. But more significantly, back in the Premier League.